I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, really encouraging news about American students and math, although there's a long way to go. Peg Tyer, education journalist and director of strategy at the Edwin Gould Foundation, is author of The Good School and The Trouble with Boys. Her article, The Math Revolution, The Number of American Teens Who Excel at Advanced Math Has Surged. Why? It appears in the March issue of The Atlantic, and we're going to be talking about that. But first, I thought we would start with a little quiz, which some of these math students, and these aren't those who have won the international competition, which we'll talk about, but these are math students from a site, you know, where young people who have a proclivity for math are learning more about it. So you want to take this quiz? It's a problem. And if you would, please, you can answer on our Facebook page where we have also, I'm going to give it to you, but then go to our Facebook page to read it again, and you'll get the options here. I thought it would be fun to start with a quiz. Imagine a rope that runs completely around the Earth's equator, flat against the ground. You assume that the Earth is a perfect sphere without any mountains or valleys. You cut the rope. You tie in another piece of rope that is 710 inches long, or just under 60 feet. And that increases the total length of the rope by a bit more than the length of a bus or the height of a five-story building. Now you imagine that the rope is lifted at all points simultaneously so that it floats above the earth at the same height all along its length. What is the largest thing that could fit underneath the rope? He said, you know, even I can get into this kind of word problem. The options are bacteria, a ladybug, a dog, Einstein, a giraffe, or a space shuttle. And in case you didn't get that, which I can understand you want to read it, it's on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Read it, and we'll announce the winners at the end of this hour. Well, at any rate, in last July, there was a remarkable thing that took place in Thailand, and Peg will tell us about this and what's going on. You're seeing slumping national test score averages when it comes to math, but there are young people who are doing remarkable things when it comes to math, and she's here to tell us all about it. Peg, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Finally, a really good story about maybe a select group of young people, but they are really mastering this subject and winning an international competition for the first time in 21 years?
I know, it's very exciting, right? And what happened when they won? Pretty much nothing. There was no response from the United States. I think the White House tweeted, "Good job, guys."
Oh, no.
I think the Jimmy Kimmel might have made a nerd joke on late night TV. Really, what we're seeing is something pretty extraordinary, and I think it's worth celebrating.
And you did celebrate it, and I'm really glad you did. I had no idea all of these things were going on for young people all over the country. I hope at some point it will go on for everybody, and maybe your article will move us in this direction. But there are, as you say, all kinds of teens who are reaching world-class heights in math, and it's really outside the classroom.
Well, it's true. I mean, when you look at the overall data for how kids are doing in this country in math, it's not very strong. So our kids really struggle in math, and we struggle to figure out how to teach it, and especially how to teach it at high levels, advanced math students. But outside of school, there's this growing cadre of kids who get a tremendous amount of enrichment that sort of develops their math minds. And I was very excited to discover this kind of subculture of math nerds, and very excited also to realize that they were being prepared for some of the best jobs of the future in technology and medicine and media, and you know, just about everything is going to have a quantitative core and in the jobs of tomorrow. And these kids are really being groomed for the top places and top colleges and great jobs.
Mm-hmm. And they do have to be groomed pretty young. As you write, in 2009, 48% of students pursuing a bachelor's degree in a STEM field switched to another major or dropped out because they didn't have probably the math background that they needed to succeed. And yet, obviously, they were bright kids.
Right. And where you really see this is kids who come out of sort of middle class and low income high schools, which fail to prepare them adequately. So you have a lot of messaging around, you know, go into STEM. STEM is where the jobs are of the future. STEM is how you, getting a STEM degree is how you secure yourself financially and your family, your neighborhood. And then when kids get there, they really don't have the preparation to succeed in those fields.
For a subject, you write, Peg, that's been around almost as long as civilization itself, there remains a surprising degree of contention among experts about how best to teach math. Do we know how best to teach math?
Well, you know, it is very hotly contested, and I think that probably there's not going to be one formulaic way. If you're working with kids who have very low ability in math, you probably want to use one set of techniques and approaches. If you're working with kids who are very advanced, there's probably other things that you can do. The Common Core math standards set a pathway that balances conceptual knowledge, thinking about math and what math really means, and the procedural knowledge, which is knowing your math facts and knowing the formulas and being able to apply them.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two really different approaches. And most teachers use some combination. In this country, we've had very little understanding of the role that conceptual math needs to play and how it needs to be undergirded and supported with this procedural knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But in these advanced classes where you see these kids who are doing sort of amazing math, it's very, very highly conceptual. Now, since the article came out, there's a lot of people who are thinking about K-12 education, and they say, you're wrong to write this piece because now everyone thinks that kids in all grades, in all levels, can just focus on this fuzzy conceptual thinking and not really get down to brass tacks when it comes to math. And that's wrong. That's a disservice. But what I say is people need to know that the ceiling on math achievement is higher than we think, that math is actually kind of in its finest form like poetry, like philosophy, that it's a tool that you can use to carve marble like a sculptor. And people need to start understanding that it's not just filling out 100 homework problems, each one a little different than the last one. They need to understand that there's a higher ceiling. And my hope in writing this piece is to talk about the fact that there is this much higher ceiling. And in fact, for the kids who get to this level, it's growing. It's very, very exciting. They're learning more than they ever have before. And it's creating this crazy pathway for them, crazy exciting pathway for them through college and career.
I think, let's talk about some of these math circles, some of these programs that unfortunately turn out to be a bit expensive, so it's hard to include everybody, which is problematic, but we'll talk about that. But you said in New York City last fall, I mean, I didn't even know anything about this, it was easier to get a ticket to the hit musical Hamilton than to enroll your child in certain math circles. So what are these math circles?
So math circles are, so I have to just say to you that I cover education. I have covered it for a long time. I'm a parent of two now adult kids, but this was not known to me. Like, I did not know that there were people who were outside of school developing their kids' math minds. I knew there were kids who seemed good at math, but I thought it was, I don't know, I guess I thought it was just they were gifted or something.
Right.
It turns out that this gifted idea for math does not really hold up. It's not that you're gifted, it's that you have experiences that help you develop your math mind. So these options for developing kids' math minds have exploded outside of school. And it's Math Circle, which is where kids get together, sometimes with a PhD student or a master math teacher or a mathematician or an engineer, and they talk about, like, cool stuff related to math, like cool math problems, and they work it through. And it's very friendly and very social and very, very exciting to watch. It's sort of like a book group, but for math problems and for kids. And not all of them are kids. Like, usually there's like a middle school math circle, and then there's like a PhD math student who sort of leads the kids through the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's programs like the Russian School of Mathematics, and Math Studio in Boston, which are these very exciting programs that kids go to on the weekends. Not cram schools, nothing like cram schools. They're like where kids learn about to begin to take the first steps towards that high ceiling of math thinking. Mm-hmm. And they work on their procedural knowledge, but they also are taught by master teachers and mathematicians and people who use math in the course of their profession, like geologists and meteorologists and people who really have a working understanding of math and who teach these classes on Saturdays and Sundays.
We'll hear more about those classes, how expensive those classes are, how we're able to reach people in all income levels in this country. There are some people who are concerned about that as well and would like to have people of all income levels go to some of these remarkable math classes. We're this hour talking about, well, who knew? Did you know that the United States won the 56th International Mathematical Olympiad last July? It was not noticed. It was tweeted by the White House, and who else said congratulations? And behind this story is a story of lots and lots of students all over this country who are mostly learning math as an extracurricular activity and having a rip-roaring good time doing it. And there are tens of thousands of young people who are involved in this. And it was the focus of Peg Tyer's article in The Atlantic, which we're focusing on this hour of the program. What is the best way to teach math? Maybe some of you have been involved in this extracurricular kind of math development. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll take phone calls during this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about advanced math, why it's surging in the United States. We may see slumping test scores in American schools, but there are many teens who are excelling at advanced math, and they're doing it in extracurricular activities, math enrichment programs, math competitions. And we just won a major one, so here's something you can learn today, that we won the 56th International Mathematical Olympiad. It took place in Thailand last July. And the powerhouses are usually China, Russia, South Korea. We won for the first time in 21 years, which is worthy of some degree of celebration. Peg Tyer is with us. Peg is a longtime education journalist, best-selling author. Her books include The Good School and The Trouble with Boys. And her latest article, The Math Revolution, appears in the March issue of The Atlantic. Let's go to phone calls if they're coming in. 800-486-8655 for your on-air participation. Liz in Eau Claire. Hi, Liz.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, I want to tell you the story of my son, who actually this is old, so maybe teaching methods have improved since then, but he's now 33-ish. When he was in high school, he just missed a cut point for a gifted and talented math program, and he failed a math class because he refused to do the homework, and so I asked him why, and he said, I'm not doing 50 problems just the same because I understand them. When I talked to the teacher, she said, drill, 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 because that's the way children learn math. And anyway, consequently, he went on to take PhD-level physics and math and did well. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping the teaching methods have changed. But what I hear is children are getting this from extracurricular activities and not necessarily in their math classes.
Peg, is that true, or are there math classes that are doing this?
You know, there are some, but they're mostly in areas where parents are involved, heavily involved in STEM and demand it of their schools, that their schools teach it and teach it at a high level. What I'm seeing mostly is that this really high-level teaching has moved outside of schools, and it's a little bit troubling because what it means is that only people who know about it or who are pretty affluent can really afford it. And, you know, we see that in the math scores of our children in across America, the number of low-income, high-performing high school seniors rounds to about zero.
Hmm.
So the kind of teaching that they're getting, so it defies credulity that there would be no low-income kids who have a talent and energy and interest in math. That doesn't, what we know about human behavior, that doesn't stand up. So something's happening in their classrooms that is kind of grinding them down, that's making, that's not producing the math minds that we really do need from all walks of life.
And part of your article centers on somebody who's really concerned about getting more low-income students who have proclivity in this area into some of these extracurricular programs that may be expensive. Can you tell us that story?
So I ran across this kind of amazing organization called BEAM. Well, I guess I'll tell you where I started with it. Looking at that statistic that there are no or nearly no low-income, high-performing math students in the United States, you know, it really stuck with me. I was like, why would that be? Why would, how does that happen? And is it true that there's just the kids who are from low-income communities can't do math? That doesn't jive with what I know about the world. So I met the director of an organization called BEAM, Bridge to Enter Advanced Mathematics, and he was embarked on a very, very interesting experiment. And what he does, it's his belief that math minds are not born but made, and that not every kid is going to be a mathematician, but there are sprinkled through the population kids who have an interest and enthusiasm and a real joy related to number pattern and number and quantities. And so what he does is he goes into low-income middle schools, really poor schools, where kids are not doing well in math, and he picks to interview a couple of kids, not necessarily the kids who are best at school or who are even the A students in math, but kids who have been identified by teachers or administrators as having a little something, having a little reasoning, strong reasoning or problem solving or joy in number. And he talks to them and he took initially 17, now the class is up to about 70, so he took initial 17 kids and he took them away for 3 weeks and he surrounded them with MIT math professors and taught them how to think about math like a mathematician, not like a seventh grader, but like a mathematician. Hmm. And then in that 3 weeks, they became very accelerated, as you would imagine. And then he stuck with them and began putting them into the kinds of math programs, extracurricular math programs that affluent kids get. And so they go into math circles, and they go to math camp, and they go go online and do brilliant.org or artofproblemsolving.org, and he found, he now has his first class, which is their seniors in high school, and they're applying to very fine colleges for engineering degrees and in STEM programs. They're strong math students, very strong math students. So he sort of single-handedly is trying to prove that number, that there are hardly any low-income, high-achieving math students, that is actually a result of how we educate kids and not a result of what the kids themselves. He knows they're out there, and he wants to find them, and he wants to develop their talent, and he's doing it. He now has about 70 kids a year that he prospects from New York City, and he says that he could prospect 140 kids from New York City middle schools, who you could really, with some intervention, with some limited intervention, could really turn into fine, fine math thinkers.
That's great. Thanks very much, Liz, for your call. Let's go to Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment and encourage parents to tell their kids to strive for the upper level. In seventh grade, our daughter, who is now in high school, took a test and was told by her teacher then that she not try for the upper level math in eighth grade. She wasn't ready for it. Mm-hmm. I think she scored like 83 or 4 on a test where the cut point was 85. And she started out feeling very lack of confidence in eighth grade, didn't take the upper level math, and came home for the first few weeks and said, you know, this is just a repeat of everything. So we encouraged her she switched over, and she not only aced the upper-level algebra, she came in, she was one of the top students in the class, and if she'd just if we'd listened to that teacher, she would have been a year or two behind in math. Now she's in advanced high school math. So I just want to encourage parents and teachers not to get stuck on one simple little score that which was being used to guide her. It was, anyway, just a
thank you.
Comment.
Yeah, yep. good encouragement. Thanks, Jeff. Peg?
And think about that. Think about the fact that we know we need more STEM professionals, right? We know we need more kids going into STEM subjects, and yet the pipeline for advanced math narrows, right? Like if you don't make a certain cut score, even by a little, you can't get into the advanced math class. Like, is that a good idea?
Right.
Is that the kind of engineering
idea.
We want? Is that the kind of social engineering, educational engineering we want to actually produce the outcomes we want? Because it's not.
Yeah. Let's welcome more phone calls. And also, just a reminder, in case you missed the top of the show, we do have a really interesting word problem that some of the students who are really moving ahead in fields of math would encounter in one of their extracurricular discussion groups about math. And the word problem is on our Facebook page. I don't want to read it again, but if you want to take a little math, you know, quiz or stretch your mind a little bit, it's on our Facebook page. We already have a couple answers that I hate to tell you are not quite right, but the right answer we'll let you know at the end of the hour. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'd like very much to have you participate in our little quiz. And we're talking about students doing some really good things in math and not getting very much attention, a movement that has students in math extracurricular activities and math competitions and winning an international prize. And it's the focus of a very, very interesting article in The Atlantic. Peg Tyer is our guest, longtime education journalist, author of The Good School and The Trouble with Boys. And her piece, The Math Revolution, appears in the March issue of The Atlantic. We're welcoming phone calls, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And let's go to Jess in Madison next. Hi, Jess. Jess, are you there?
I am.
Yeah,
thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
2 points. I've got three daughters, all of whom are doing well in STEM. One of them is a freshman in college, and she just sent us a note about getting the highest GPA in her engineering sorority, which we're proud of. That's the first point. And really, it's counter, I think, to what your guest is talking about, but I've always emphasized that math is kind of like athletics, like doing a jump shot. You have to kind of practice some of these things to get good at them, and you do the same thing over and over. In my mind, having suffered through calculus in college, there was a finite set of concepts you had to know, and you just had to kind of practice them so that when you saw the clues or the hints or the parts, you were able to recognize the whole thing and know what to do because you'd practice them, just like any number of athletic things. My bigger point, though, is that in my mind, kids with talent like this are outliers, and our educational system is set up to produce, you know, huge numbers that meet the minimum rather than paying any attention to these outliers. So how do you remain a specialty in a sea of commodity is kind of my point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great show. I'll take any comment off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jess. Peg?
Yes?
Oh, do you want to respond to that?
Well, the question is tell me the question again.
How do you get, well, I want to take it in the direction of No Child Left Behind, which I think gets to Jess's point, if you'll stay with us for a moment here, Jess. How do you develop the talent in those outliers when the educational system, as you say in your piece, has been more of an attempt to bring those at the bottom up, which is also a worthy goal, but those who have talent who are really outliers who are not being identified as they should be because we have a standard that's kind of more, you know, in the middle. So how do you reach those outliers?
It's an interesting question, and probably one of that I grappled with writing the piece quite a bit. So we have a really complicated relationship to the concept of gifted children, right? Like, gifted by its very nature, even calling a kid gifted kind of makes me squirmy, because it implies that it's not the jump shot, right? That it's something you're born with, like it's innate, right? Which I don't think people really think about academic ability like that anymore. I think that's sort of an outdated notion. But say if we change the language around it, say, what about the portion of kids who has an appetite for accelerated learning? And what do we do about those kids? What we've done about those kids in terms of a national policy is nothing. We've basically said we need to focus on kids getting them at grade level. So we need to focus on the kids who are slightly below grade level, who with some intervention we can get above grade level. And that's where our federal resources have gone. And it's been up to the state and local districts to decide what they're going to do with, say, the one-third or a quarter of kids who have an appetite and an interest and the bandwidth and to tackle accelerated learning in some subjects. What do we do with that? What we've done with that is we've just moved away from it. We've just pretended they don't exist. And affluent families, what they do is they go outside of school to get their kids' needs met. And poor families can't do that because they rely on their public schools to educate their children. So because we have this sort of complicated relationship with accelerated learning and calling kids gifted and who's talented and who's gifted and who's not and how, you know, what resources we put to those kids, I think we've done nothing. And as a result, the pipeline that develops these fine, fine math minds is largely centered in the coastal areas, in
right.
tech hubs, mm-hmm. in places where parents can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. And
so it's a complicated issue.
Yeah.
Yes, in some ways the gifted and talented programs have been a way that affluent white and Asian families, that's the charge, have gotten more resources, more public resources to their already resourced kids,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's been the rap. And mm-hmm. so for equity reasons, we've said, well, let's not fund gifted and talented. I say let's first of all change the name of gifted and talented.
That's a good idea.
But I think that what I would like to see is I would like to see there be some enrichment, something offered for a broader range of kids who do have the appetite to go further faster.
Mm-hmm. And Deanna in Spring Green writes, my daughter's school, like most, celebrates athletes in every conceivable way, from high school hallway trophy cases and glamour photos of athletes to what seems like an unlimited budget for athletics. There is virtually no recognition for kids who excel at academic subjects like math, and it's been that way as long as I can remember, Peg.
I know, that's kind of sad. I mean, it was kind
sad.
Of sad what happened with the with our math Olympiads. I mean, those kids, they dominated the planet.
I know, they won the
They got made fun
yeah.
of, you know?
Oh.
They got made fun of on late night television. Now, mind you, they all ended up at Harvard and Caltech and Princeton,
exactly.
So who's going to have the last laugh?
Right.
But you know what? Why can't it be that you can be a scholar athlete in this country?
Mm-hmm.
It's really not a model that we hold up very much. And why can't it? Why, you know, to a certain point, it is getting cool to be a nerd now, because there's a sort of growing recognition, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. You can actually be a nerd and then actually become a titan. And so I think that being a math nerd is becoming slightly more cool in some precincts, but I think that could be something that people could really message around quite a bit, get a lot of I think it could be a great model for a lot of kids.
I agree. I am sensing a talk show here. What would it be like if the world really celebrated nerds? Wouldn't that be something? I mean, just to think about that for a while. What would happen in high schools, and what would happen to all of us, to the whole culture, if we celebrated people who are really brainy? I like that. Yeah, I like that. The other thing that we
there's a brainy lady.
Not in math, Peg.
just didn't have the right. Just didn't have the opportunity to develop it. I have new hope for. You know, I really don't think after the work that I've done thinking and talking to people who teach math, it's not really about being good at it. It's really about, as your caller said, it's really about the jump shot. It's really
right.
about about working at it.
Yeah. And there is, when you, that problem that we put on our Facebook page, when I read this problem, I use it to really get petrified from word problems, but there's a whole different way of framing this than imagine a rope that we put on our Facebook page. Isn't it an interesting way? It's a whole different way of looking at math for me. I'm seeing it in my mind.
And let me also tell you that in these extracurricular classes that I went to, and this, in these enrichment classes like Math Circle and math camps and this program for low-income kids, Bridge to Enter Advanced Mathematics, it was so exciting that I was on the edge of my... It was all I could do not to raise my hand to answer a question. It was so engaging. It was like a debate, almost a political debate, and you had your view of it, and they made you conscious of the way that your mind was working to approach the problem, and they validated, even if it was the slow way, they validated that. Now, this is not necessarily the right approach for a classroom situation, but to have been exposed to math instruction in that way, even in my for the limited time that I was in reporting the story, I have to say it was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And you also write about the enthusiasm in the groups. The students are engaged, the teachers are engaged. It's like having a terrific discussion with somebody on the radio. This is having a terrific understanding of the problem they're trying to solve and what their solutions are and becoming totally engaged. I love that, concentrating on it fully. Isn't that neat?
And I would say having teachers who are very, very highly skilled at math is crucial to understanding how they pull this off. Like, we don't have highly skilled math teachers, by and large, in our public schools. So it's not to say that, you know, everyone can pull this off. Like, you really have to know a lot about math to pull this off
exactly.
In a way that's not just dumbing it down.
Yeah, and Jean Timo in Milwaukee, we have a limited time, Jean, but she points to this in her comments. Hi, Jean, go ahead.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Long time no talk. But quickly, every job application I've always seen as a teacher, they talk about differentiation, which is challenging the both ends of the spectrum and keeping the middle going, too. Also, my school, we wear uniforms. Every Wednesday, they have a special day. They get to wear a red polo if they are on the honor roll, and it's celebrated. We have a high honors banquet every quarter. And there's a nice dinner and recognition, so we celebrate, hopefully, both the athlete and the academic achievers.
Excellent. Excellent. On that note, we bid adieu because we have business to attend to. That was kind of poetic, wasn't it? I can't remember what I said, but I think it was. Thank you so much, Peg, for writing this wonderful article and drawing our attention to something that we needed to have on the air. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Peg Tyer, longtime educator, the piece is in the March issue of The Atlantic.